Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
A wave from Kevin Magnussen, who is very much enjoying this race from the Pratt Perch, chilling out currently, watching his man Renger van der Zande on lap 301, and hoping to keep the pulse relatively low. These race drivers can do that, of course. They'd much prefer to be in the car and doing the attacking, but there's now only half a second between the second place car of Renger van der Zande and the race leader, Jimmy Johnson. This stint started for Jimmy with a 5-second lead, and now he's got Renger van der Zande all over the back of him. If Renger's held up at all at this point, this might be Alexander Rossi's opportunity to slash the gap of 15 seconds that he has to third position, and Mike Conway will be wanting a bit of fireworks ahead of him as well, so that he can join the scrap in the fourth place Cadillac. But they are completely together now. Jeremy Shaw, who joins me in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre, heading through Speedway Turn 3. That is the battle for the overall race lead.
Yeah, pretty good, isn't it? It's tremendous stuff. Very close between these two. I'm impressed by what Jimmy Johnson has done here. This is very, very different for him. But he's turning some very, very good laps. Pretty consistent, working his way nicely through the traffic. And it's to stay ahead of someone like Renger van der Zande is no mean feat. Okay, Renger's only got two fresh tyres his last stint, but still, I'm impressed by what Jimmy is doing there. You talked about Alexander Rossi. Six laps ago, he turned that car's best lap of the race in a number 10 Acura. It was a 1:35.253. And then a little while, maybe 20 laps or so ago, Kobayashi, who was driving number 48 car at the time in the lead, he turned that car's fastest lap as well. So it's really interesting to see, you know, some of the cars are turning, they're going faster and faster as the race goes on. Others, not so much. Number 31 car, for example, number 5 and number 60, all those three cars set their best laps within the first 15 laps of the race and haven't really come close to that since. As I speak, Mike Conway brings the number 31 car into the pit lane. This will be a regular stop for him on lap 300. It's a little bit early, actually. 300. Well, no, 21 laps. That's about what that team has been doing. Some of the other Cadillacs are doing 22 laps, but the number 31 car seems to be only doing 21 on a regular basis.
Okay. And got off strategy from some of the other cars relatively early on. But yes, 21 on the previous lap for NASA. He'd done a 22 before that. And then we're kind of into the phase that was affected by yellow flags. So not reliable to read too much detail into that. It was a 20-minute caution pretty much between 3 hours and 50 minutes of green. And we're now up to 2 hours and 15 minutes of this green segment as the 48 car comes in to pit lane. So from the lead of the race, Renger van der Zande now called as the race leader, but I think that happened after Jimmy Johnson peeled off, so he wasn't actually overtaken on the racetrack and therefore kept his defence up. And at times that was very hairy indeed, particularly the lap prior to his in-lap, he needed to go around the outside of a whole gaggle of cars at turn two. And I suppose that reduced the opportunity for Renger van der Zande to force an overtake, because there really was only one single file route past all of the lower class bunch of cars. And then there wasn't the scope to get a move done into the international horseshoe. But Jimmy Johnson, who took the car over on the previous pit stop from Kamui Kobayashi, will stay on board. That's confirmed now as he leaves. But a new set of tyres, which he's desperately trying to get temperature into as quick as possible, weaving on the pit road, and he'll do a bit more weaving probably on the run down the back straight as well. Meantime, an LMP3 car, which looks very much like a Duquesne, heads out of the left-hander at Speedway Turn 4. It is a Duquesne. It's the Moulin Motorsport America entry, car number 6 that leads the class, no less, of Stephen McAleer. And he's got a 30 seconds as a gap back to Joao Barbosa. But on the average times, I wonder how they compare on this particular stint. The two leaders in LMP3 should be able to tell you that. Yeah, 15 laps so far for Stephen McAleer on this particular stint. It is close between McAleer and Barbosa. McAleer's done 15 laps, Barbosa the Portuguese 16 laps, and they have, well, here's the average for McAleer. It's a 146.058. For Barbosa, a 146.057. There is a thousandth of a second in it on average times across pretty much 15 laps. Phenomenal consistency from both drivers there. And that gap has not altered at all, therefore, first to second. It's maybe changed very, very slightly here and there, but it's pretty much 30 seconds between the leading Duquesne and the second-placed Ligier, an indication as well that with this reset for 2021, with the new chassis for LMP3 coming in, bigger engine, new design for both the ex-Norma, now Duquesne, and the Ligier, but it looks like their performance levels is completely the same, which is testament to those that are balancing the performance, and also a great set of regulations when you've got completely different manufacturers building to the same regulations, different cars. To get the performance that accurate is most impressive. Sorry, Jeremy, struggling to hear you there. Say that again.
How about the third place car at LMP3? Oliver Askew has seemed to me to be turning some pretty good laps in that number 74 car as well during this stint.
He is even quicker than the two leaders, 145.3. So yes, you're right to point that out. The two leaders doing pretty much exactly the same times, but on average, 6 to 7 tenths of a second quicker than McAleer and Barbosa. So yeah, we need to look at the gap second to third coming down as well, which is about the same, 25 seconds there or thereabouts. But yeah, not a surprise that Askew
is number
five
car
so well
in the pits.
Car 5 is labelled in the pits, yes, at the moment. It's in fact, Jeremy, behind the wall. It's not only in the pits, it's in the garage. And it's got damage on the left side of that Cadillac.
Uh-oh.
Now, what happened here was this on the in-lap? There's a car backwards at turn one, and it's got completely T-bone there from a backwards Porsche. So that's what's happened. Missed that at the time, but at the point, it's the 16 right motorsport car, isn't it? I think it's the right motorsport
that
Porsche.
Just came out of the pits, I think, hasn't it?
The right car, you mean?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've just been in the pits. Let me just check.
So maybe an outlap.
Yeah,
car
it has.
16.
It's Patrick Long. Patrick Long. He just came out of the pits on that lap, I think.
Hit the brakes. The car did a 180, and he's then heading towards turn one backwards and cleans out the 05 Cadillac, absolutely T-bones it. And these cars are built very, very tough indeed, but there's really not a lot left to that left-hand side of the car. So presumably the 05, well, how's it got from its resting position into, well, behind the wall? Because I haven't got a time that would tell me that it's done a very, very slow lap round back into the pits again. Unless, of course, it's not triggered any timing loops as it's done so. But Tristan Vautier, we'd be expecting to see a lap time of 3 or 4 minutes in order to do that.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It may have managed to sneak into the paddock via one of the other routes, I suppose. And just not triggered the pit in, although it is labelled in the pit. So at some point it's gone through the loop. And perhaps, of course, Jeremy, it's probably missed all of the infield, hasn't it? And therefore had that lap completely deleted by timekeeping as a non-legal lap. And therefore we don't get it displayed on the screen. But there's huge dismay, as you would quite rightly expect, out at Mustang Sampling and JDC Miller Motorsport, thrust into this rapid repair work. It's been put up onto the incompressible jack stands. And Joe Bradley, watching this along with Jeremy Shaw, myself, Johnny Palmer, how quickly a race can turn, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely, Johnny. I'm just looking at those pictures there on the live stream, and that's my environment, mate. When you know what, it's about how a team reacts to that kind of adversity that sets the men from the boys, so to speak, or the girls from the women, to be correct. I've got a theory as to why that car hasn't triggered the timing beam. The Cadillac team tend to be the first pit apron on pit in. And also, there is a turning in point to the paddock behind the wall area right at pit in. So they basically come in the pits, and before they get to their pit apron, there is access to the paddock, which they'll have turned immediate left. I think the timing beam's further down the pit lane. So when that car rejoins, that's when we'll see that what will be a huge amount of time being registering on the timing and scoring, I would think.
Yeah, I go with that. But also, I think because the crash happened at turn one, so then Tristan Vautier is never going to go through the infield. He's just going to rejoin at turn six, isn't he? And timekeeping will say, well, that wasn't a lap, so therefore we're not going to count it. And I think you're right.
I think they take a penalty if they miss that, and the bus stop as well. If you bypass the bus stop, you get a penalty.
Well, there used to be a rule at the bus stop that if you didn't take it, you then had to come to a halt in the kind of runoff road and then start again.
I think that's still applies, Johnny. Just haven't seen
does it. Does it? I thought we'd had years when actually that was scrapped and they went for something else. But what we have got, Joe, is reference that the car came in the pits. So it did trigger the loop at pit entry. It's never given us a time, which, as I say, should be about 3 or 4 minutes once Tristan's recovered and then, well, just trawled its way all the way around the infield below the double yellow line. And you're right that if and when that car rejoins, it's going to be, well, 30 minutes possibly for a lap.
I'm not on site and I can't really get a closer view of what happened with that car, but it looked like it got in the middle of the side pod on the left-hand side of the car, which is basically just an area where things are mounted and auxiliaries are mounted. So that's, I'm not going to say an easy repair job, but it's better than being hit in one of the front or rear axles, because then you're damaging suspension, you're damaging drivetrain. If it does just had a clean hit in the side pod, that all of that will be needing to be replaced. However, it's a massive job because you talked about the whole floor area, the whole under tray, which attaches to the actual tub underneath the car. And it looked to me as though that's the kind of repair job. So my point is, in saying that, he'll have been able to get that car, Vautier will have been able to get that car at speed around the lap and into the pits. That's probably why we didn't notice it. There wasn't a massive situation where he was limping it back to the pits. He would have been able to get there pretty quickly if all the four wheels were pointing in the right direction.
Also, for the Porsche, it's not like hitting one of those DPIs when it's sitting stationary, you know, and you would really feel that. It's a car on the ragged edge, which is just on the very edge of adhesion. So, I mean, they're a bit like billiard balls in that it's not going to take much to pitch it into a spin. It looks like a big impact, but actually the Wright Motorsport Porsche has been able to continue around for its remaining laps. And you know, I wouldn't say the Mustang sampling DPI is unscathed, but the damage would have been a great deal had it been doing a slower speed. Almost the high speed that you're approaching turn one has helped the impact to be less severe, although I don't really like the smoke / steam which is pouring out of the engine bay on the five car, Joe.
Johnny, that's because in that side pod that I mentioned, one of the things that is housed there is one of the radiators. It's a radiator, an oil cooler or cooler or whatever. It is a radiator, so you're going to have engine coolant, but you're going to have to detach hoses and have engine coolant all around that area. So that's probably what that steam is. What this situation has done, Johnny, this race is such a... The Daytona 24 Hours is a race that is... To win this race, you have to have a 24-hour optimized run. I'm not sure, Jeremy might be able to add to this, but I'm not sure in the modern era we've seen a car soak up a time in the pits where it goes laps down for it then to climb back up. I think for the number five, we're now going to see a damage limitation run when that car gets back out.
Well, that's right, Joe. I mean, they're going to hope to... There's only seven cars in the class, so they're going to hope that somebody else has some serious issues as well. Crucially, however, there's a note here from Race Control. Car 5 penalty, incident responsibility with the 16. So according to Race Control, they've obviously seen the footage, which is... Well, it's actually right in front of them because it's down in front of the tower. But it must have been Vautier that was spinning that collected Patrick Long in the number 16 car. So it has been the number 5 car that has been called for that, and he will have to serve a penalty if and when they get that car back underway again. So that penalty has been called, and it is against the number 5 car. In the meantime, Renko van der Zander has come out of the pits, and he's now in the lead of the race. So he stayed out 5 extra laps compared to Jimmy Johnson, who made his stop on lap 302. Renko van der Zander came in on 307. He just completed 309. And as a result of being able to stay out on the racetrack with some clean air, remember he was right behind the number 48 when the number 48 car ducked onto the pit lane. And with some clear laps under his belt and then a good pit stop for Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing, Renko van der Zander now leads this race in car number 01.
Really interesting message that from Race Control. Now, I assume that they have been looking at the angles that we don't get to witness, and there are many extra locked-off CCTV cameras that they have access to. And through the years, they actually invited me into Race Control to have a look at those and then be able to describe them to you on the radio a little bit later on. But there must have been an initial bit of contact which then led to the Porsche spinning, and then the secondary bit of contact, which I thought had done the damage to the side pod of the 5 car. But I can't quite visualise at the moment what would pitch the Porsche into a spin from the 5 to then put the 5 in front of it and then be reverse T-boned by it. But as I say, they've got those extra angles, and I'm sure we'll know the answer to that. And I'm going to have to pay very close attention when I get the chance to describe that incident to you. But it's peculiar, and it goes to explain a very unusual, it turns out, not error from Patrick Long. That would have been it was going to be the date in the diary to note down, but we need not to now.
I'm sure I saw two
here we go.
Prototypes being involved in that incident. You'll see the other prototype appear. There's the Porsche, and then we've got another prototype, which is the number 6R. That's the number 16. Which car are we on board with there, Johnny?
Well, we're on board with the Porsche. And 16, I don't see, ahead of the 16, there is no sight whatsoever of the 5, which tells me the 5 is behind it. So there must be some contact to push the Porsche into a spin. And then the 5's in front of it.
Yeah, you're
that
right.
That is the car that gets collected. So it's bizarre. But there must have been a tag. Maybe it was when they were side by side, to put the Porsche into the initial spin, and then the kind of instigator, as in Tristan Vautier, then gets walloped for a second time when the Porsche's out of control.
That would be a thumbs
I'd like
up
to see that again, but I can tell you what, the number 60 car was embroiled in quite a battle with number 5. The number 60 car had got past number 5 car just a couple of laps before that incident. I didn't see the number 60 car in that picture when we saw the replay. But certainly Vautier he had been overtaken. Those two have been having a pretty good battle over the last hour or so. In the previous stint, Cameron in the number 60 car was running on an older set of tyres. So he was struggling a little bit for pace and was overtaken by the number 5 car. But now on this most recent stint, he'd been catching up again and had actually overtaken Vautier just a couple of laps before that incident.
A strange one, certainly, and we're still getting information through from various sources, which I'm reading through as we speak. Something about that. Well, with thanks to Declan Brennan with these messages, talking about, did we, by the way, ever get to the bottom of who was at the wheel of the 16 at the time? Oh, we said Patrick Long, didn't we? Yeah, this was just about 10
minutes
ago.
Yeah, and he came in and made a pit stop right afterwards to hand over to whoever's driving the car now, which would be, oh, Patrick Long. Okay, fair enough.
I thought you'd said Patrick Long. It's just that Declan Brennan says that, was 10 minutes ago, so it's about the timing of it as well. But Jan Halen was on board, 13 minutes ago. Coming out of the pits, quite possibly, yes. The right Porsche kept going, then pitted after the problem.
Correct.
Jan Halen.
I think we saw the pit stop before we saw the incident, and that's what explains that.
Okay. You still reckon it was on a lap for the 16?
No, I think probably not. I just think the incident took place, then the Porsche came in the pits, and then we saw that the replay of the incident after that had already happened.
Which put it slightly out of sequence in our minds, yeah. So it was the incident that led to the pit stop rather than the other way around. That's all right. We can piece these things together. Sometimes days after they've happened.
Yes, exactly. Never too late.
Exactly. Thanks, Dex, for the update. Another chance to describe it to you. Right, well, see, there is a prototype there, but it cannot be seen by the 16 car at the point of impact. So it's got to be either behind or alongside the 16 Wright Motorsport car at the point that the initial contact is made. The Porsche is then in a spin.
So there goes Cameron through the picture. Then there's another car. I think it's a GGD car.
A Lexus,
and then
I think,
the other two are having their little thing behind it, aren't they?
Yeah.
Curious.
Well, I think there were two points of contact. There was the first one that put the Porsche into the spin, and then when the Porsche's out of control, it goes backwards into the side of the 5, which has done all the damage, which has sent it behind the wall. The initial glance between a car, I'm going to say the 5 and the 16, I don't think did a great deal of damage to the 5 or the 16 for that matter, but it was a secondary impact which posed the problem and puts the 5 car behind the wall. That's now tumbled down to 13th position, and the 16 car has actually got away with that relatively unscathed. Now, bear in mind, this is a GT3 spec Porsche, so the engine is in the traditional place in this Porsche. It's not like the GT LM car where the engine and the gearbox have been spun through 180 degrees. It sits right at the back of the car, and that was my concern for the 16. The 5 might get away with it because, as Joe was saying, side pods are important aesthetically and they carry things like radiators and vents and whatnot, but the repair process could be pretty quick. However, you run the risk of massively damaging the engine on this Porsche, but it sounds sweet to me. There it is in the background. And the flat 6 is singing for Patrick Long, who took charge of the car after the incident, we think, with Jan Halen at the wheel when it took place. Matteo Cressoni leads this class, car 21, from Corey Lewis in the Paul Miller Lamborghini Huracan, and Aaron Tielitz in the number 14 car is in third, ahead of Zach Robichon and Raffaele Marciello, now driving the Sun Energy 1 Mercedes. So Ferrari, Lamborghini, Lexus, Porsche, Mercedes is the current top 5, and to make it a different manufacturer again in the top 6, Richard Westbrook for TF Sport is there for the Aston Martin brand, car number 97. Renger van der Zande leads the motor race, though, 5 minutes past 1 in the morning, and there's a gap of nearly 4 seconds between Renger van der Zande and Jimmy Johnson, with Alexander Rossi in the 10 car ahead of Mike Conway. Busy again out on track for the 16 machine. A chance to see the rear of that car, courtesy, as always, of Rooftop Ray's brilliant camera work. And the rear wing has escaped very nicely indeed on that Wright Motorsport car. I suppose the DPI machines are that low slung that the rear wing has just gone over the top of the 05 car and didn't need to be straightened out at all. So amazing that there'll be a little bit of dentage on the rear of the 16, but it could have been a lot worse for that car, which had been featuring in the top three. Obviously, it's put it quite a way down the order now, but a good result is not out of the equation for car 16, running now in 11th position with Bill Oberlin to chase for Turner Motorsport. Porsche is already spinning when the contact, the proper contact, is made with the number 5 car. But there has to have been some initial contact between 5 and 16 for the 5 car to be assessed incident responsibility. And that's the bit we haven't quite caught. Oh, there is damage on the left-hand side of the Porsche, which I haven't spotted actually on the 16 car. So sort of rear left hind quarter, just in front of the rear wheel on the left side, is quite badly affected. That may need to be addressed in the next pit stop, probably with some tape and other bits of cable ties. Nick Damon's always a big fan of that. Repair work on the move. Jeremy, let's forget that incident for the moment. We've spoken a lot about it and focus on what's happening then at the sharp end with Renger van der Zander now ahead of Jimmy Johnson and looking to try and extend the gap.
Yes, indeed, and it's staying pretty fairly similar. It's fluctuating just a little bit between the Renger van der Zander and Jimmy Johnson, but really not much at all. 3.5 seconds in all it is. Actually, it was 5 seconds on five laps ago, so it's actually come down a little bit. Alexander Rossi in third position. He's closed down just a tad, a couple of seconds or so. 10 seconds behind in that behind the second place car in third. And then the gap back to Mike Conway in number 31 car, that has also remains fairly stable as well, around about 28 seconds. And then there's a pretty big gap back to Dane Cameron in the number 60 car. Prior to the last round of pit stop, the gap between number 31 and the 60 was around about a half a minute. And it's now 36 seconds, so it's actually gone out a little bit. So Cameron told me before the start of the race that the car felt pretty good, but not great. But they thought it was going to be a little bit of an uphill battle in this race. But look, it was still, we're still, 2.5 hours away from the halfway point in the race. So a long, long, it's way too early to draw any sort of meaningful conclusions, I would say.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, even if when we get to half distance, which will be 3:40 in the morning, you've still got the back nine to complete. You've still got an awfully long way to go. And just the hint, maybe, of a pattern developing in the race. Corvette are doing very well so far. They must be elated with the speed that their cars can produce. Only the second year of the development of this car. That looks very much like Jordan Taylor getting on board the number 3 to take over from Antonio Garcia, yes, and the number 4 car, Tommy Milner, has yet to pit, but the 4 car tends to be later than the 3 on the cycle. Jules Gounon in the number 62 Ferrari is back out again for Risi Competizione, and John Edwards rejoining the fray as well in the 24 BMW. Bruno Spengler at the wheel of the 25 car, and it's all about that top 5, really. The factory teams, although Risi Competizione is sort of a pseudo version of that. The one car that we wanted to be in the mix but isn't at this stage is the WeatherTech Racing Porsche, which had dramas very early on and sees it circulating in 37th position overall with Kevin Estra at the wheel, looking to try and get ahead of, 13 GT Daytona cars and the bulk of the LMP3 field as well. So set for quite a bit of recovery there. When we're talking 12 laps, that car is going to have to try and make up on the rest of the GTLM field. But again, it is a relatively small class, so some dramas up ahead could see the Porsche back in contention, even though it'll have to do it from a fairly long distance away, looking for lengthy problems really for any of those cars ahead of it. But this is good from Corvette. I mean, they had a strong car last year, but it was in its debut season, Jeremy. It feels like they've really learned from their opening year with the mid-engine Corvette in the 2020 WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, building on that now.
Yeah, the Corvettes.
The Corvettes, you mean? Yeah.
Yes, indeed. The Corvettes, yeah. No, I mean, they had a really strong run here last year. That was the debut for that car, you know, the world debut for the C8R. It was a really strong run. They ended up with, not the finish they wanted, but they finished fourth in the race here 1 year ago. But the car certainly was competitive through most of the race. And as I say, that was pretty much out of the box. So, you know, the car, for a debut season, it was a remarkable year last year for that new mid-engine Corvette. And ended up with a deserved championship. But, you know, it was so tight in GTLM last season. The Porsches often had the fastest car, but for one reason or another, they just didn't get the results until right at the end of the year. The Corvettes, no doubt about it, deserved the championship. But here at Daytona last year, and the last 2 years, it's been BMW Team RLL. And, you know, even now, we've still got all five of those cars in GTLM duking it out amongst each other. Interestingly, the number four car has now taken the lead in GTLM because the number three car pitted a couple of laps ago, and Tom Milner still has not brought that car into the pits. He's completed now 302 laps. He's done now a couple of laps more, or will have done a couple of laps more than the number three. I would expect the number four car to come into the pits next time around because the other class contenders right behind him have already just made their scheduled pit stops.
Yeah, Tommy's previous completed stint was 33 laps, I noticed, so you could get that far. I don't think that will have included any yellow because we're far enough clear of the previous yellow period now, 2 hours and 45 minutes nearly. So 33 laps looks to be a goer for the Tommy Milner Corvette, the silver one.
Yeah, it does.
So, yes, either at the end of this one or the next one.
Wow.
Strange, that, isn't it, that you get slightly better fuel mileage out of one car than the other when they're more or less identical.
Yeah, it is, but then the number four car was in the slipstream of the number three car pretty much all the way through that last stint. They were sort of separated by, you know, probably not much more than a second or so. So when you're in that sort of situation, you often can, you know, take advantage of that draft and lift off the gas a lot earlier than you would do otherwise, even if you were saving fuel. So that could be a significant saving. I doubt it's going to be two or three laps worth, but it certainly could be a lap at least.
Yep. Less air resistance means less fuel being burned, I suppose, as well.
Yep.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it all goes together to provide your slight advantage across a race. You know, you talk about hooking all of these stints together. It seems very, very small advantages with each step of the race. But if you can continue to produce that, it can present you with a Rolex by the end of it. Joe Bradley always likes to talk about fuel mileage and tyre management and all of that sort of business, together with getting the cars in and out of the pits as quickly as possible. I'm impressed with so few pit stops so far, Joe, from each of the Corvettes, actually. Once Tommy Milner comes in for his latest stop, it will only have been 10 visits to pit road, whereas the next best is the Ferrari with 12. So it's not just the race on the track, but also so crucial to be quick in the pit lane as well.
It's a high-speed game of chess, guys, I told you. Ages ago, I always use that analogy. It really is. But just to sort of shed some light as to where he may have gotten that extra lap from, I'll use the example of this. If you finish the stint with, let's say, 0.4 of a lap, not litres, not time, but 0.4 of a lap of fuel in the tank, the next stint you finish with 0.8 of a lap, because finishing with 0.8 of a lap worth of fuel in the tank isn't enough to get you around that lap. It's the next stint where you can grab that extra lap worth of fuel that's in the tank, and that mounts up to be usable eventually. And also, there's no doubt about it that the Corvette guys will be fuel saving. And it was, I think it was last year when I interviewed Scott Dixon, and I asked him that question. And I asked him the question about how do you fuel save, Scott? Because he is the master at it, isn't he? He really is. He's shown his class. at this race and in this series, but also in IndyCar, and he's in his main drive. And I thought, I asked him tentatively, and I thought he wouldn't really tell me. However, his description was so detailed and so eloquent. And if I can summarize it, it's basically, as you get to your braking point, if you're in a sprint race, you would go from a very rapid transition from the throttle pedal to the brake, and you would maximize that and then go straight back onto the throttle. You just basically smooth that transition period completely, and you just lift off the throttle slightly earlier. You're then scrubbing off a little bit of speed, which enables you to then brake later towards the corner, and you are able to then carry the same amount of speed sort of into the corner, mid-corner and out of the corner, but in that phase of throttle transitioning the brake and then going back on the throttle, you smooth that up, and that does amount to an amount of fuel being saved. If your right foot's not smashing the throttle, then you're not using fuel, and that will mount up. It's all about the mathematics, and it's all about the minute savings you can make at every single braking point will eventually mount up to something tangible.
Yeah, well, you make a really good point in that at the end of his stint, there's always going to be a little bit of fuel left in the tank that you just cannot get to, and is useless after one stint, but very, very useful after three, because it can all add together. So painting pictures with words is Joe Bradley, as part of our VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock report, and describing that perfectly could well be the answer. Well, Tommy Milner's done 33 laps now, so surely has come into the pits at the end of that lap. And yes, he has, because he's handed over to Nick Tandy in the class-leading Corvette. There was only 3.9 seconds between himself and Jordan Taylor. So Jordan will head back into the lead of the race in car number three. And that is 10 pit stops completed for the number four Corvette. And we're back to the phase, therefore, that the four will be doing the chasing. And a prime opportunity once more to get into the slipstream and save a little bit more fuel, lifting and coasting. We'll keep our eyes peeled for that, and as to whether Nick Tandy can get as far as Tommy Milner's just done on two separate occasions. 33 laps is the high benchmark to aim for. Renger van der Zander, meanwhile, on to lap 16 of this stint. Best lap of the stint so far, a 136.1, but he's more happily at home in the mid-37s. And not very far away from that, actually. Jimmy Johnson, he's only about a tenth of a second behind on the average times. And further into the stint, Jimmy Johnson, by five laps. So it'll be the 48 that pits earlier than the 0-1 car. And the 10 in relation to that, only 1.8 seconds away from Jimmy Johnson's second place Ally Cadillac Racing car. So Rossi working hard in the previous stint to try and chisel away the 17-second lead. This is much better now for him because he can see the car he's chasing. Every time he comes out of one of the tight corners on the infield, there will be Jimmy Johnson's Cadillac. And he can locate the crosshair very easily indeed. LMP3 heading down pit road is the Riley Motorsports Ligier. This car's second now. Well, Jeremy, we talked about the speed that Oliver Askew was able to produce, and his hard work means a place gained during that stint, coming down pit road in second with Moritz Krantz leading the class.
Yeah, it's been a very, very good stint there from Oliver Askew. I think it might have been a double at the wheel of that car. The youngster from Jupiter in Florida was very much a star in the open wheel ranks in the road to Indy, as we see a pit stop now for the second place car. That's Jimmy Johnson bringing that car in. He will hand over most likely to Simon Pagenaud, I would imagine, would be climbing aboard number 48 car. Really good effort there by Jimmy Johnson. He led for a goodly portion. I was hanging right there in second position, but the man on the charge was Alexander Rossi. It was definitely closing in on Jimmy Johnson as the Ally Cadillac leaves the pit lane. Routine service there for the number 48 Ally team. That's part of the Action Express family.
I would agree with you on Simon Pagenaud, because he did stint three after a double at the start of the race for Jimmy Johnson in the instantly recognisable 48 car that he has run, I assume, for his whole career. Certainly the that font of 48 with the italic bright yellow colours that so often has adorned a NASCAR with his name on the roof, and that race number adopted for the Ally Cadillac machine for this race as well. Outlap for Simon Pagenaud then, and we'll be back to the cycle of drivers, which will, well, I guess see a double stint for the Frenchman. Then it'll be Mike Rockenfeller to take charge if we follow suit with the order of drivers we've seen so far, and then eventually we'll get back to Kamui Kobayashi, who was pounding out some really impressive lap times. We expect nothing less from the Japanese driver. It'd be great, wouldn't it, to catch up with Jimmy Johnson after that stint. I'm sure Joe and others can attempt to organise that. We'll give Jimmy a bit of time as well to cool off after an intense couple of stints. Heading out of the West Horseshoe is the second place car of Alexander Rossi, with BMW 25 Bruno Spengler just ahead. Diving now up the inside of that car, the Porsche, the WeatherTech Porsche, was one to be lapped as well. Now that might well have been a GT Daytona Porsche, actually, judging by the speed that the BMW had over it. So an all-white Porsche may well have been the 64 car at Speedway Turn 1. Jeremy Shaw.
Yeah, no, that would be the logical explanation, certainly. But the GTD cars are actually pretty quick on the straight line, in a straight line, and there's not much speed differential at all between the GTLMs and the GTDs, remarkably. And all of them are quicker, as we saw briefly from an onboard there, than the LMP3 cars. They can only do about 178 miles an hour, I think, on the straight, the LMP3 cars. That's what they're kind of regulated to. So that, you know, they make their speed mainly through the corners, and we talked about it at the beginning of the race, the propensity perhaps for incidents between the LMP3 cars and particularly the GT traffic, but just leave it at that. It's been pretty clean for the most part so far.
Well, actually,
now for the number 10.
Talk about the WeatherTech Racing Porsche potentially going slowly, but actually that's produced the best lap of the GTLM class full stop.
Indeed.
142.642. Yeah. So sadly its position rather gives us a different story, but that's because of dramas earlier on in the race. It's a very fast race car, that car number 79, and would have been great to have had that in the hunt. It's one of the new RSR19s that debuted in this particular championship at the start of 2020, 4.2 litre engine in those cars. And I assume WeatherTech have acquired one of the factory Porsches, have they, that was run by Core in order to get that car in this race? I don't know enough about the chassis numbers, in truth, but I assume that's one of the old factory cars. Yes, says Jeremy. Well, interested to know whether it was the 911 or the 912 in a previous life. Somebody will know that notes these things down, as the Renger van der Zander Cadillac is on lap 327 with just over a minute's advantage, but that's only because Philippe Albuquerque has peeled off into pit road to take charge.
Other way around, no. Rossi came into the pits to hand over to Philippe Albuquerque, is what happened there, Johnny.
Right, sorry, did I express it the other way? Yeah, I knew what I meant, but probably the words came out in completely the wrong order at this time of the morning. 125.
That's a fair comment.
Yeah, all of the facts and figures were right on my screen. It's just about my delivery, which can often be a question mark next to it. Dane Cameron in third in the 60 car, and Simon Pagenaud running in fourth position. In LMP2, not told you a great deal about the order there recently. It's still the number 11 car that leads, with now Stephen Thomas driving the Wynn Autosport blue and silver car with the yellow stripe across the roof line there. He's being chased by Mathieu Vaxivière for Tower Motorsport. There's only 5 seconds between those two now. And Vaxivière's last lap around was a 140.6. That was quicker by 0.4 seconds than the Stephen Thomas-driven car. Andrea Bilicki kind of still loitering in the background, but he's got about 60 seconds to try and find. So the Cetelar Dallara is, from the perspective of the two leaders, not a distraction. And then the 82 running in fourth is Eric Lux for the sole surviving Dragon Speed Orica. Remember, 81 hit Dramas very early on indeed, and was in fact our first retirement. A moment at the bus stop chicane on the previous lap for the class leader in LMP3. So car number six having to take to the grass there. Say the class leader because it had the number one on the side. Yes, it is. Moritz Kranz for Mühlner Motorsports. And that was a lap that was 5 seconds slower than that, what that car is capable of. So indicative of the grass track moment at the bus stop chicane for Moritz Kranz, the German who shares that car with Lawrence Hoare, Kenton Cook and Stephen McAleer. And a gentleman that we were hearing from earlier on RS2 IMSA Radio, Lance Wilsey. We had a lengthy chat with him, and great to have him on the broadcast. Jeremy and myself chatting to him, and he's now at the wheel of the Sean Creech motorsport car trying to hunt down Moritz Kranz. Oliver Askew staying at the wheel of the 74. Pit stop puts it back down to third position, the Riley Motorsports car. But he is going much quicker than those two cars up ahead. So you can see that 30-second gap evaporating very quickly. And we'll have a really good battle for, first of all, second, and then quite possibly the lead of the class as well, judging by Askew's current speed.
He was shown in second place because Lance Wills had already made a stop at that stage. So third is where he has been running now for quite a long time in that number 74 car for Riley Motorsports. But, you know, Moritz Kranz there with that off. Moritz Kranz, by the way, he and Lawrence Herr were massively impressive last weekend. They dominated, absolutely crushed everybody else in the first round of this year's Michelin Prototype Challenge Series here at Daytona. They just ran off and hid, basically. But they're certainly having a harder run of it here this afternoon. Moritz Kranz, this was his first race in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, but he did race here at Daytona. He drove a Porsche Cayman GT4 car 2 or 3 years ago in the Michelin Pilot Challenge race. So he does have experience around here already. And it's made very, very good use of that. But a little bit of an off there, but he's still got a handy lead. It was around about 50 seconds over the number 30, excuse me, yes, over the number 33 car. Have they completed another lap since then? You know, it's about the same, actually, 55. Well, I think he's not yet completed this next lap, so we'll have to wait and see what that gap is next time around. But the gap from number 33 to the number 74, it's now 31 seconds, I think, between the number 33 and the number 74.
It's interesting you say he's raced at Daytona before. I've got him racing at Road America in 2017 in a Porsche Cayman, so that will have been... Yeah, GT4 car. So that will have been the Michelin Pilot Challenge, or what it was called in those days, 4 years ago. Haven't got down on the notes that he raced at Daytona. So interesting that you raised that. And you useful track knowledge.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay. I'm wrong. Well, we can check. It was a Mühlner Motorsport America entered car. He raced with Gabriele Piana in a Porsche Cayman GT4. Piana, I know from his vast experience around the Nürburgring Nordschleife in GT3 cars. Moritz Kranz, a regular, or has been in the last few years in the Michelin Le Mans Cup that runs in Europe on the support bill to the European Le Mans Series. And kind of is Mühlner Motorsport, or very, very strong ties with that outfit, regularly racing with them, as he is indeed doing this weekend. Car peeling off to driver's left is the number 9 car for Lars Kern. So that's the fourth place Pfaff Motorsports Porsche heading into the pits, just as the Ally Cadillac car of Simon Pagenaud zips by into the tri-oval. And the Dane Cameron-driven Meyer Shank Racing Acura is into pit road. It's only when the cars are stationary you get to really be mesmerised by the paint schemes that are utilised for this particular championship year. I hope these are not Daytona specials, as it were, and how these cars are going to look for the rest of the year. But certainly a lot of money has been spent on just the design of these machines, and it is glinting in the floodlights as that car now leaves pit road with the Sirius XM sponsorship on the dorsal fin. Your mind was playing tricks, was it? Well, I can't rely on my mind playing tricks. That was purely from archives that I'd just managed to look up. And so it was a Road America trip rather than a visit to Daytona for Moritz Kranz.
Indeed. Indeed it was.
Yeah, that's all right. Yep. I'll let you off.
Well done.
It was 4 years
Good
ago.
For you.
Through the bus stop chicane goes the number 60, taking charge now of that machine, Olivier Pla. K-Mag's back at the wheel of the 0-1. 330 laps completed. The record, by the way, record distance. Those with shortish memories might even be able to recall that it was last year that we hit a record distance in this particular race at 833 laps. 2,965 and a half miles for the Wayne Taylor Racing Cadillac of Ryan Briscoe, Scott Dixon, Kamui Kobayashi and Renga van der Zander. I would say at this stage, Jeremy, 833 or even 834 is a stretch. I think already we've had too many full course yellows to get there.
Yeah, I think so.
But there we are. I mean, we had a... Did we not have back-to-back race distances? Oh, no. The previous year, 2019, was the rain-affecting one, wasn't it? So that certainly wasn't a record distance. I seem to remember we've had maybe two of them in the last 3 years. Off-track moments now. Was that the six a few laps ago? Yes, it was, at the bus stop chicane, hitting the grass on the inside of the bus stop and also on that loop coming out as well. So the delay that we mentioned at the time for Moritz Kranz, the much talked about Moritz Kranz now, but he did hang on to the class lead. Oliver Askew, 30 seconds becomes 20 seconds. In fact, 19 seconds now in his chase to hunt down Lance Wilsey. So that is going very much in the favour of the Jupiter man, running in third place in car 74.
Yeah, although actually Moritz Kranz has set the best lap of the race in LMP3. He turned a 1:43.485. That was way back on lap four, right at the beginning of the race. Scott Andrews has set the best lap in the number 74 car. That was lap 186. And Oliver Askew has just completed lap 307 in that third place car, car number 74. But Askew, as I was saying a little while ago, he was a standout in the open wheel ranks, moving up through the Road to Indy. He won the USF 2000 championship. Actually, he won a whole bunch of scholarships to get up to his opportunity last year. Won USF 2000, finished third in the Indy Pro 2000 championship. Won the Indy Lights championship in 2019. That earned him a cool $1 million to take towards an IndyCar ride for last year, which he secured supposedly in a long-term deal. Who's that going off the road there at the bus stop?
It's Moritz Kranz again.
I think it was a replay again. That secured him the ride with the McLaren, the spam team. Was it Arrow McLaren? Excuse me, Schmidt Peterson. And it's supposed to be a long-term deal, but for some reason they let him go towards the end of last season, which I thought was a really bizarre decision because, from my perspective, Askew did a really good job last year. He and Pato O'Ward were a really good combination, two young drivers, you know, for the future of the sport. But Askew, he had a couple of crashes, for sure, which you're going to have as a rookie at that level. But he was competitive, had a podium finish, but unfortunately had a big crash in Indianapolis and ended up receiving a concussion, which kind of went undiagnosed for a couple of races. And it was shortly after that he was told his services wouldn't be required for this year, which is a tremendous shame, I think, for the sport, amongst anything else, because he is a super talent, as I will ask you. And hats off here to the Riley Motorsports team, and Gar Robinson in particular, and Bill Riley for picking him up, giving him this opportunity to drive in the sports car ranks. And he's having a fine performance now. He's now within 16 seconds of Lance Wilsey as he tries to make up ground on the leaders. Currently running his third place, that's Oliver Askew in car number 74 in LMP3.
Pretty sure I remember interviewing Oliver when he came to the UK and was run by Cliff Dempsey Racing as part of the Team USA scholarship. I can't remember the name of the guy that runs that now, but that would have been 5 years ago, I think, 2016. But I remember him coming to the UK and we got him into the studio and, really, I wouldn't say got to know him, but you get a feel for one's character, even in a sort of 10-minute interview, and a thoroughly nice young man he was in those days, and amazing that we're now 5 years on from that, but still no slower once he gets behind the wheel of a race car. Yes, certainly does. Gets quicker with every day, I find.
Yeah.
Kevin Magnussen continues to lead the race at lap 333 now completed, and he's got a lead of 6 seconds over Philippe Albuquerque, the relatively new name back into the number 10 Konica Minolta Acura. Simon Pagenaud and Mike Conway also in Cadillacs. Was there a drama a moment or two ago for Philippe Albuquerque, who came out of the... Oh, no, big pardon. We're back to live pictures now, having revisited a moment or two ago in the garage for the number 10. So that was probably the back end of their stop. I think all seems to be under control for Wayne Taylor Racing and the Konica Minolta car. 21 is still the GT Daytona race leader. So AF Corsa Ferrari now in the hands of Simon Mann. Matteo Cressoni was in charge of the previous stint, and I think it was in the hands of the Italian that that car took the lead and then looked to extend it. So a really good drive from the likeable Italian. And this is the next stint for Simon Mann. Now, Simon did do stint 2 and 3. The second one, very close to the race start, was only 14 laps, but he then had a much meatier one at 27. And then since then, he had a one-off stint to separate Cressoni to Daniel Serra, who sort of did a stint and a quarter. And then we've had Nielsen and Cressoni back in again for 30-odd lap stints. So this will be another long one, I would wager, for Simon Mann, heading towards the 30-lap phase. So just getting settled in now. And his job is to try and hang on to the lead as best he can. As 17 seconds as a cushion back to Aaron Tielitz in the second-place GT Daytona car, which is the first of the Lexus machines from Vassar Sullivan, car 14. And, well, really very much for company, Tielitz has got Corey Lewis all over the back of him in the Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini Huracan. So 14-1 could be set to change any moment. Last time around, marginally faster for Tielitz, actually. I'm trying to work out which way that's gone. Is that Tielitz having just overtaken Lewis, do we think? Or is Lewis doing the catching there in GT Daytona, second and third?
Don't know, I'm afraid.
No, that's all right. Your lap chart is very, very detailed, sometimes doesn't include all the GT Daytona action. Go on.
A pit stop for the leader in LMP2. Stephen Thomas has just brought the Wynn Motorsport car number 11 into the pits. He was a super stint by Stephen. That was the end of a first of a triple stint for Stephen Thomas. He's just given up the lead now to the number 8 car. Which will go back into the... It's just been a seesaw battle between number 8 and number 11 now for quite a long time. The Tower Motorsport by Starworks entry leads at the moment. Matthew Vezeviere at the wheel of the number 8 car. Stephen Thomas, though, I think will resume most likely in second place. And Andrea Bilicki has also just made a pit stop in the third place LMP2 car number 47. And I think all those three cars were on the lead lap. And then Eric Lux in the number 82, Dwight Merriman in the number 18 car, both one lap off the ultimate pace in LMP2.
You're tuned to RS2, IMSA Radio. That's Jeremy Shaw, and I'm Johnny Palmer, and we are both in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre, also joined by Joe Bradley, who's looking after the VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock reports. And it is time now, with another hour of the race done, 10 completed already, for the Mazda in-race update, which is as follows. Kevin Magnussen leads the race in the 01 Chip Ganassi Racing Cadillac by 9.4 seconds over the chasing Konica Minolta Acura of Philippe Albuquerque, car 10. Simon Pagenaud is third for Ally Cadillac Racing in another Caddy DPI, car 48. And Mike Conway in a similar machine, this time run by Whelan Engineering Racing, the red and white car with the instantly recognisable number 31 on its flanks. 60 car for Olivier Pla is Meyer Shank Racing and another Acura. And in sixth place, the 55 Harry Tinknell driven Mazda DPI from Mazda Motorsports. Then we're into a bank of six LMP2 cars, led by Mathieu Vaxivière then for Tower Motorsport, having got ahead, that's in the number 8 car, and he's got ahead of car 11 Stephen Thomas for Wynn Autosport. Giorgio Cernaciotto for Cetelar Racing is third in the only Dallara in the entry, car number 47, the only Dallara in LMP2. And Eric Lux, having made that stop, or making that stop, looks like he's going to rejoin in fourth or fifth places for the lone Dragon Speed car. Eric staying at the wheel. That just flashes up on my screen now as he heads back into the motor race. GTLM, all about the five cars of, well, the two Corvettes, the two BMWs, and the Risi Competizione Ferrari. Nick Tandy leads the class with car four, the silver Corvette, from the sister machine of Jordan Taylor, number three. Jules Gounon is next in the red Ferrari from Risi. And then the two BMWs, John Edwards ahead of Bruno Spengler. Kevin Estra is still running, but when you consider the fifth place GTLM car is 17th overall, the sixth placed car in that class is sadly way down in 34th position after a couple of dramas in the early phases. LMP3 led by Moritz Krantz, despite a slight off-track moment at the bus stop chicane for the Mulner Motorsports Duquesne D08 for the German driver. That's car 6. He is in front of Lance Wilsey and Oliver Askew, but Askew's got the gap down to just 0.4 of a second now to Lance Wilsey. So a change for second place is very much afoot. And in GT Daytona, the 21 car is leading a huge... in it. There are still 18 running, and the AF Corsa 21 car is driven by Simon Mann and has a lead of 15 seconds over Aaron Tielitz in the 14 Vassar Sullivan Lexus. Then it's Corey Lewis and the Lamborghini Huracan of Paul Miller Racing, last year's winners, running with the number one car, number one rather, on the doors. Lars Kern is fourth in the number 9 Pfaff Motorsports Porsche, and in fifth place, Italian driver Raffaele Marciello for Sun Energy One in a Mercedes, car 75 is fifth. Those are your Mazda in-race positions. And this is RS2 IMSA Radio for 2021.